All right. Okay. Waiting for the other. All right. Hi, everybody. It's Monday. We're back on track. And we're back for Pirkei Avot, History and Hashkafa. A couple of things. First of all, I remind you that this year is brought to you by, was initiated by, I'm just fixing the camera up here, sorry, is initiated and brought to you by the Tel Aviv International Synagogue, headed by Rabbi Ariel Constantine. And this coming Shabbat, I will have the privilege of spending Shabbat frontally, non-virtually, with the community. I'm scheduled to speak Friday night, I think, at a lovely outside dinner. And those of you who have been studying with me for the past over a year, I think it's about 14, 15 months, and those who haven't, are invited to please come, say hello. I'm really looking forward to seeing people in live, and not just as commenters on the Facebook, on my Facebook page, on the Shul Facebook page, on my popular whatever the case may be, So please come, say hello. I'll be there Shabbos morning also, although I won't be performing. I'll just be there as a person going to Minyan like everybody else. And I'm looking forward to it. And I understand it's not going to be all that hot, at least not as hot as it's been. So there's a reason to brave the lack of air conditioning from your air-conditioned homes to the air-conditioned shul. So that's number one. Number two. Let me urge you, everybody who is eligible, everybody in the sound of my voice who is over 60, please, and living in Israel, please, 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 go get your third shot. Help us beat this. Help us beat this massive, this wave of the Delta or the Indian variant, and take care. Most importantly, take care of yourself so you don't get seriously ill. Lechu lehitchasen, as they say on the radio all the time. Please. Number two. Okay, so we are now we're starting a new Mishnah. We're continuing the discussions that were started by Hillel in the second chapter of Pirkei Avot. Here we are. I'm going to read you through the comments. This is chapter 2, Mishnah 5, Mishnah Hay. What we're going to do is, as has been our want the past few weeks, is we'll read through the whole Mishnah. We're going to break it into its component parts, and then we'll discuss each one separately. And then, if it appears that there's a unifying theme or unifying idea which ties all of the Mishnah, these Mishnayot together, I'll try to develop it with you. Okay, so. Hu haya omer, this, as I said, is attributed to Hillel HaZaken, the original Hillel the Elder, who was the founder of the dynasty of the heads of the Sanhedrin. And he lived at the end of the first millennium, and first millennium BC, and the beginning of the first millennium CE. Hu haya omer, this is what he was wont to say. These are Omer doesn't mean walking around all the time saying this. This is among the wise sayings, you know, the Bartless quotations of Hillel. So, what did Hillel used to say? Ein bur yerechet, a person who is a boor. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean a person who's boorish, B-O-O-R. We'll have to define what boor means. But ein bur yerechet, a person who's a boor. Or a boor, can never be really God-fearing. V'lo ama'aretz, and a person who is uneducated, can't be a chassid, cannot be pious. Now, we're going to see that the word chassid means many different things. So in order to understand what chassid means, we're going to learn ama'aretz means, we're going to really define our terms very, very carefully. V'lo habayshan lameid, if you are shy, that's probably the easiest way to do it. If you are shy, you'll never learn. A person who's shy can't learn. Maybe because they won't ask questions. We'll see what the problem is. Dalawa Kapdan Milamed. And the person who is overly strict, person who's overly demanding, but personally he is unforgivingly demanding, can never really be a good teacher. A good teacher has to know how to balance being demanding and I don't say being indulgent, but knowing how to sort of access the student and go to access the student. Law Kapdan Milamed is interesting. Actually, there's a Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal has an interesting lecture that he gave in Hebrew. It was then published in Hebrew. I don't know if it's available. I'm just looking to see if it's in his collected essays here. I don't know if he if it was translated into English. It's called HaKapdan Kimilamed. What happens when a person who is extraordinarily demanding actually does try to teach. And it's something of an appreciation of his father-in-law, of Rav Soloveitchik, Mori Varabi, also who was well-known, certainly up until a certain stage of his life, until, actually, I know it, we all know it, to what time of stage of his life, 1967, was an extraordinarily, terrifyingly demanding demanding teacher. After 67, he lost his mother, his brother, and most importantly, his wife in a short period of time, this period of like 3 months. That sort of changed him. He mellowed and he wasn't as demanding. He was plenty demanding after that too, but he wasn't as scary as I understand he was before that. And so he writes an appreciation of Lichtenstein as to how that, how that works. Now, by the way, so I recommend this. I actually recommend this appreciation of Rav Soloveitchik. I am sure it is on the VBM, the Virtual Beit Midrash of Har Etzion, and you can look up HaKapdan Kimelamed, and then or the demanding teacher as a teacher, something like that, in the English part of the site. Okay. Anyways, Lo HaKapdan Milamed, a person, but in principle, a person who's overly demanding can't really be a good teacher. By the way, a teacher who's overly indulgent, a person who's overly indulgent also can't be a good teacher. I've discovered this as a student, and also it's one of my sins. I'm overly indulgent, and I think that those students that I was more demanding of actually did better. I didn't yell and scream. I mean, you know, there are limits. But anyways, let's go on. Below kol hamarbe b'schorah machkim, if you get too organized, if you are too involved, if you devote yourself far too much to business, then you'll never become wise. And if they're in a place where nobody is willing to take a stand, nobody's willing to stand up, be a man, it means being forceful, being assertive, and so on, try to do that. Okay, that's going to be really loaded, as you can imagine, especially in contemporary time, that's going to be a really loaded statement. But anyways, we're going to start with a person who is a boor cannot be truly fearing of sin. So it's really striking. So first of all, what's a boor? A boor is not a guy who gets constantly drunk and insults all the people. That, I mean, that's boorish behavior in contemporary parlance, but a boor in Hebrew, and this everybody, I mean, all of the commentators are unanimous about this. A boor in Hebrew is a person who is totally uncultivated. In Hebrew, if you have an uncultivated field, which has never been grown, it's wild. It's out there in the middle of who knows nowhere. Okay, that's called a stable. It's never been. It's never been plowed. It's never been planted. It's just, I think, call it virgin territory. Okay, so that's stay bored. So a person who is totally uncultivated means a person. Again, it's really striking. A person who's totally uneducated, totally undeveloped, totally almost on an animal, on a primal basis. He has no, I mean, you know, I don't know, Tarzan coming out of the jungle, whatever the case might be. A person who was raised by lions, by wolves, I mean, you know, Romulus and Remus. A person who has no intellectual achievements, is not developed in any way, shape, or form, such a person can never be, a person certainly not educated, can never really be sin, can never be taught to fear sin. And again, there's total unanimity in the, you never find this, this is very rare, total unanimity among the commentaries as to why that person can't be, why that person can't be a fear of sin. If he comes, lives among people, he knows there are things you're not supposed to do. So, I'm going to read you one comment by, here we are, by Rabbi Matityahu Hayetzari, who I've mentioned before. He says, first of all, a boor is person, worse than a person is an Amaretz. An Amaretz is a person who didn't go to school. But that doesn't mean he's not totally human. It doesn't mean he doesn't have any good qualities. So he says, a person who is a boor is a person who not only is not educated, he has no idea to get along with people. He has no manners. He has no respect for anybody else. He's like totally narcissistic. He wants to satisfy his basic needs, and that's it. He says, in that way, says the says Rabbi Matityahu Hayetzari, he says he's worse than a the person in ignoramus. You could be uneducated, but you could be a mensch. You could have no certain basic decency. Ki am haaretz, he says, afal pi she'ein ben Torah, even though he's not educated, he has no Torah, yesh bo derech eretz, he knows how to act with people, vosek bishovo shalolam, he knows how to get along with people. So, but a person who has no, oh, my mistake, it was not, I wasn't quoting from the Rabbi Matityahu Hayetzari, I was quoting from Rabbi Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, who was a Spanish rabbi who ran away from Spain in the wake of the persecutions of 1391, which broke the back of Spanish Jewry, and moved to North Africa, moved to Fez. So he writes, that's what he writes. He writes that a person who's a boor is a person who's just totally, he's not a mensch. You can be a mensch. You can be a person. You can be act like a human being and not be necessarily educated. Okay, but some people don't have a chance to go to school. They don't have privilege. Doesn't mean the kid don't have to be decent. And that's what that's basically his point. And boy, you're a person can't, thus has no idea how to live with other people. Such a person can never be in fear of sin. Why? Why? Because he only cares about himself. He's going to say, he only cares about himself. So therefore, you can't hear that such a person can't hear that something he can't, he's not allowed to do something. But I want it. I want to eat it. I want to do it. I want to take it. Such a person who's totally, it's a sort of like an infantilization, but such a person is totally self-concerned and only worried about his own, about number one, such a person will not be able to accept restrictions. He can't be afraid. He can't, the whole idea of that there are limits upon him will be totally wasted. He can't hear. That's an Ein Bor Yerechid. I actually thought, and then we know people like that. The odd part of this, I'm going to throw this out there. You can think about this or not. I thought about the fact that often extremes meet in the middle. So a person who was raised in the wild and has absolutely no ability to be able to act like a person with other people is just totally self-concerned, self-contained, and therefore he can't accept any limits upon his behavior, upon his self-satisfaction. That could be from a person who never had that. It could also be from a person who's just such a narcissist that he makes himself into a boor. I wonder. Anyways, I was also thinking about the fact that a person, say I have a person who is new to society. He's new to society. He's lived on his own his whole life. He has absolutely no education, absolutely no manners. He never learned basic decency vis-a-vis other people. And then you tell him that there are things you can't do. There are sins, there are crimes. You know, he can't be sin-fearing. Maybe it's the other way. not because he can't hear the restrictions, but maybe because he's a person of extremes. Either, as we said up until now, he can't hear any restrictions on himself, or no, he thinks everything's wrong. Such a person wants to fit in, understand it to mean, he wants to fit in to such a degree that he'll become paralyzed. A yirei chait, a person who's afraid of sin-fearing, afraid of making a mistake, afraid of hurting somebody, afraid of sinning against God, such a person has to be able to know that there are things that are allowed and there are things that are not allowed. Now, all of the commentaries are worried about the fact that he won't be able to say, there are things I'm not allowed to do. But it's also possible that such a person will go to the other extreme and say, I can't do anything. Everything's a sore. For your, that's my take for your consideration. I think this idea of Ein Bor Yirei Chet, though, will become clearer when we go to the next phrase, which is actually, I think, are going to take us up the rest of the time, and I don't think we're going to finish it. V'lo am ha'aretz chasida. And a person who is an Amaretz cannot be truly pious. That seems to me a very difficult statement. You mean that a person of simplicity, a person unless you're educated, you can't really be pious? Well, maybe we don't know what the word pious means. I mean, I know plenty of people that are uneducated that are spiritual and pious people, and it doesn't say, what's the problem here? So, yeah, we need to define am haaretz, a word ignoramus that we use very often. And the word am haaretz actually has become quite, just passing, the word am haaretz has become quite, better known, let's put it this way, in the past year, because of the passing of Rav Adin Steinsaltz, whose first Yortzai was just last week, last Monday, a week ago, Dafka, exactly a week ago, Zechron Tzadik Livracha. When he was a kid, his father, who was a Marxist atheist, but a very warm, very strong Jew, said, I don't care if you believe in God or not. He says, but my son is not going to become an Amaretz. I refuse to let him not know stuff. And ended up going to first the Mahaleh, and then he went to Chabad, and so on, and became who he became. What's interesting is that I had heard that story first when he was written up in Time magazine a billion years ago, and he quoted the father saying, you shouldn't be an ignoramus. And I remember thinking my wife saying to me, says, he didn't say that. He says, you shouldn't be an Amaretz. Being an Amaretz is sort of like a not... That's not what Jewish people want to be. Anyways, but why can't you be pious? There are plenty of people that are pious and are well educated. On the contrary, you could that's sort of very elitist kind of snobby kind of position. I hope that somebody out there is thinking, wait a minute. Chassid, the whole point of Chassidut. As in the type of Hasidut that was advocated by the Baal Shem Tov, who died in 1760, with all of the different Hasidiyot now today, the whole point was to, as a pushback against the elitism of the rabbinic class, who said you can only make it if you're a big scholar, and if you're just a simple person and you're not well educated, so you have no place in the worship of God. And Hasidut came to teach you no, and we know that there's the famous stories about the little kids. There are two versions of, it's sort of subversions of the same story. There's a version of the story that the community was praying and that Baal Shem Tov was upset because nobody, the prayers weren't going up to heaven. I believe it was Yom Kippur or Shoshana, whatever the case might be. And there are two variations. What happened? For either a little kid came and he didn't know how to pray. He had never been educated. He was an orphan, whatever. And so he had a whistle. So he said, I'm going to blow the whistle to God, and he blows the whistle, and that opened, and that the sincerity of that unarticulated prayer opened up the gates of heaven to the prayers of the community, and the Baal Shem Tov was very happy and told them that that was what had done it. There's another version, a little less the other version of the same thing is where the little kid, he knew a little bit, he knew Aleph Beis, but he didn't know how to pray, he didn't know how to read. So what he did was he just recited Aleph, you know, Aleph Beis. So he recited Aleph Beis. He keeps saying Aleph Beis over and over and over again. He says, here, God, are all the letters. I will, you know, you put them together into the prayer. So the point is, below Am Aretz Chassid, this kid was not a Talmud Chacham. This guy was not a scholar, this little kid. So how has it happened that, how does it happen that, that they say, no, these people are very pious, these little kids. So what the Baal Shem Tov, what Chassidut seems to teach is the opposite of the Mishnah. So what's going on? So I'm going to leave the definition of an Amaretz to next time. Let's assume it just means somebody who is uneducated in Torah. Okay. A person who knows, as we saw, that the Rav Shimon ben Tzelech Duran said, the Tashbetz, that it can mean that a person who's an Amaretz can be a decent person. It could be a person who has good manners and has good qualities and good moral qualities and so on, just not educated, didn't go to school. But what about a chassid? What does that mean? So, again, I think we all will assume, oh, I know what a chassid is. A chassid is a guy that, whatever it is. He's a Lubavitcher, he's a Belzer, he's a this, he's that. But it's not true. The word chassid, the original word, the word in the Bible, Chesed is a person who does chesed. So what's chesed? Chesed is something which flows out of the individual. One does chesed, one is gomel chesed. Gomel is to wean. In other words, chesed is an act of compassion, of grace, of identification for another person. Stucca and chesed are two different things. Stucca, you write a check. You're going to throw a couple of coins in. That's stucca. That's fine. That's a sort of magic. You should perhaps identify with the person and try to be nice. And then there are all kinds of ways to give stucca, not to a charity, or stucca not to take into consideration the feelings of the person who's the recipient. But stucca, it's sort of like something of a detachment. Chesed is something else. Chesed is something you can only do by getting your hands dirty, by getting in there and establishing a rapport with the person, physically helping them in one way or the other, especially when a person is down. What is chesed? Chesed is burying the dead, visiting the sick, helping an old person cross the street, helping an older person or a person doesn't have the means to go shopping. Chesed is something which comes from deep inside you and requires commitment. It's a deep expression of one's sense of identification and of empathy with another, which leads you to action. In other words, it is something which comes from within, and therefore a person who does chesed. It gives a testimony to the inner recesses of his or her spirituality and of her moral content. His or her moral content. It speaks to autonomy, because it comes from me. Stuck is somebody forces you to do. Chesed comes from you. It pours forth from the individual's sensitivities. A chassid, therefore, in the Bible and in rabbinic literature, and in fact, up until the 18th century, up until the 17th century, okay, meant a person who strives because of his or her inner yearnings to do more than what the Torah requires. Torah says do X, the Hasid, or the Hasid or the Hasida feels that I have to do more. I want to do more. I want to go beyond that which the Torah demands, because I don't find that I'm able to express my relationship with God or express my desire to be close to God or to fill His will, capital H, capital W, with what the Torah requires, with the minimum. I need to be a maximalist. I need to live in the, to use another Talmudic phrase, lifnim mishurat hadin. I need to go beyond what the narrow minimum standards and requirements of the Torah. So, for example, the Torah talks about, we're going to talk about this a lot next week. The Gemara talks about a group of people who are called Hasidim Rishonim. The Hasidim, by the way, were the group from which the Maccabees who joined the Maccabees, who decided they had to take proactive action against the Seleucid Greeks, leading up to the story of Hanukkah. But Chazal talk about Hasidim HaRishonim, and these are all, and consistently who these people are. Well, as I said, we'll talk about next week. But what marks them is the fact that they always did more than the minimum halacha was. So, for example, the Mishnah says in Masechet Brachot, it recounts that before you pray, you shouldn't just run into a shul. You should wait, come a couple of minutes early. You should sit down, get your thoughts together, think, put yourself in a frame of mind to pray, and then pray. And then afterwards, don't go running out either. Sit down for a couple of minutes. I'm doing that for 3 years. Minutes, sort of to be able to transition out back into the world. You need this sort of like move from inside, sort of time to move from one modality of existence to another. And then the Mishnah says, Hasidim HaRishonim. But the truly pious of an earlier age, they would sit for 3 hours to meditate before they got into the mood to be able to pray, understanding the out of appreciation of the magnitude of the action that's involved, or the moment that's involved of coming to God's presence and as a supplicant and in a prayerful mode. And then they would sit for an hour or so afterwards as well. I don't know what happened when they did the work, but that's another story. So in other words, because of their inner spiritual needs, they would sit there and do more than the Torah response. The Gemara in Bava Kamma says that Hasidim HaRishonim, before we get, well, let me preface that. You are responsible to make sure that, what are they called? In Hebrew, they're called mifkaim. The things that can cause damage are not extant in your house. I mean, you shouldn't leave a sharp knife on the table, and you shouldn't have glass on the floor, and whatever the case might be. Because the person might go ahead, that's your responsibility. You are not responsible, personally, to get rid of hazards, has the word. Hazardous things in the street or in the public square. That's not your responsibility. However, Hasidim HaRishonim, they would go beyond what the Torah requires because they don't want people to be hurt. And so they would make sure that if there were brambles in the street, if they saw a piece of glass in the street, and somebody might get hurt, so they would take the initiative. Instead of walking around it, instead of ignoring it, instead of saying, I'm going to wait for the city, I'll wait for the municipality to clean it up. In the meantime, somebody might get hurt. They would take the initiative, and they would take out of consideration for their fellow citizen, they would throw it out or get rid of it or kick it to the side of the road or whatever the case might be. Okay? The law doesn't require it, but their sense of personal responsibility towards somebody else does. You do, a chassid always does more than the Torah actually demands. So, if that's the case, what is so low? So that's the kind of chassid that of whom we are speaking in this Mishnah. Lo amharetz chassid. A person who is not educated cannot be that kind of pious person. But that's not true. The story, the The chassid that I just described, of course, doesn't fit the chassid that I mentioned before, like Belzin and Lubavitch and all those other things and Ger, but you don't have to be, you don't have to be particularly learned to do those things. So why is knowledge required to be able to express one's internal pious impulses? And trala, time's up. You're going to have to wait with the question till we'll have to wait with the question until next week. As I said, those of you who are in Tel Aviv on Shabbat, please come by Tel Aviv International Synagogue Friday night. If you want to go for the dinner, I think they can still make reservations. And if not, just come through davening and say hi. I'm dying to meet, to non-virtualize all of the people who I've interacted with over the past year and a half, or a little bit less than a year and a half. And those of you in Israel who are over 60 and haven't gotten the third shot, go get vaccinated. We'll see you next week. Bye.